Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
Just gone 7:48 Central African time, and Alhamdulillah, Ahmad Parak, Councillor Ahmad Parak is there in London, and Alhamdulillah, Summa Alhamdulillah, we have none other than one of the best parliamentarians that this country ever produced in its history, Ahmad Mandoor Sheikh Imam, joining us for a bonus edition now till 9. Alhamdulillah, Ahmad Mandoor Sheikh Imam, Assalamu Alaikum wa Rahmatullahi wa Barakatuh. And tell me, how are you doing this fine, beautiful morning?
Alaikum salam, rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Mashallah, day in the city of Durban indeed. I see the beaches are celebrating, but it was quite a hectic day yesterday. Absolutely no space. Like I said before, despite the poor quality of the water, people are still frequenting the beaches. But I guess holidaymakers. I mean, I went to Escort the other day, and I can tell you the traffic was unbelievably. You know, right from about Sidara, right down to Durban, there was traffic, a lot of traffic actually, bumper to bumper, makes it very difficult. And the number of heavy-duty vehicles on the road. Perhaps, I don't know, maybe at some stage we're going to need to consider during these festive periods where there's a lot of traffic that, you know, heavy-duty vehicles should be pulled off the road. Failing that, I can tell you the number of accidents is going to continue. You can see our Maulana Salim Mohammed from Pietermaritzburg, his wife, his two children, died in a tragic but horrific accident. May Allah grant them all Jannah for those, inshallah. There's been another 7 died in the N3, 9 in Pumalanga. These are, you know, quite horrendous crashes if you look at it. But, you know, once again, reckless driving, alcohol, the consumption of alcohol is playing quite a role in the number of accidents that are taking place. Also, fatigue. And you notice that a lot of these heavy-duty accidents are caused because of fatigue. Drivers are rushing from one province to the other province to deliver and come back because they get paid per load, not on a weekly or monthly basis. So these are some of the things that's contributing to the high accident rate. I must give credit to the South African Police Services. Wherever I have been, I've seen the men and women in blue all out there, you know, stopping, searching vehicles, checking out at, you know, hotspots, they are there. So I think they're trying to do their best, but under very, very difficult circumstances. And Gaza, of course, it has not stopped, my brother. It's getting, you know, worse every single day. In the last 24 hours, over 200 in Gaza have died. 100 journalists thus far have been killed, and more importantly, I'm told that they're asking the people of central Gaza to evacuate. People have got nowhere to go at all, and yet the world is still quiet. Not enough. The protests that are taking place worldwide are just not enough, just not enough. Clearly, you can see that the intention here, together with the United States of America and things, is to clear out Gaza, particularly to clear out Gaza. And that is because of the gas line there, because of its strategic position through the channel into the Mediterranean from Africa and others, really. And when it comes to the children, you can see they have a plan to eliminate the children in order to eliminate a complete generation. And this is how serious the situation is there. And I think the world has become a little complacent from what I see as far as this, because whilst, yes, there are a lot of protests and more people today are aware of what is going on than ever before. But is it enough, brother? Is it enough? It just continues unabated in Palestinian territory. And those that have the power to intervene. We talk, you know, there's been a United Nations resolution the other day, in the, you know, but is it enough? Nothing is being done to stop the Israelis and more importantly, to put pressure on the monster of it all, and that's the United States of America. Now, I'm not sure what else it needs to do, but I think it needs collective responsibility, engagement between all the role players. We cannot sit back and just allow this to continue. Really, we can't.
Yes, Abada, we've opened up the lines. People, you can comment, you can ask questions, and we will entertain your questions, and Ahmed will be answering them. Yes, Ahmed, as we look at many things happening, I mean, in Durban, you find that two women were shot in Durban by a drive-by shooting, and then you have all these other uncompromising things that happens in this area. We notice that the security, they say they have cameras on, but you still find that the beachfront is still flooded with these car guards and these unscrupulous characters coming from the nearby informal settlements. When will the country get rid of that, number one? And number two, you talk about the congestion of traffic. Perhaps our, train routes, our other routes, our buses and all this is being compromised because the government is not given a free hand to have all these different types of transportation to come into place. So that's the reason for this congestion. And you'll find besides the trucks, the second biggest volume of traffic are the taxis, Ahmed.
Well, let me say this first of all, you are correct. They make up quite a large volume on the road, but the government has initiated and started the rail service between Durban, Johannesburg and Cape Town, and which is very, very cheap, I must be honest. I think Durban to Johannesburg is about 170 rand, 430 rand from Durban to Cape Town or Durban to Cape Town. So yes, they have. And remember, there's been sabotage in that particular sector with vandalism of the railway tracks and things of that nature, cables and things were being stolen. So yes, indeed, I think they are introducing the quality of the roads is another problem that we need to look at. But also we must admit that those roads have been damaged by these heavy-duty vehicles as well. I mean, when I went to Escort to Mbezi the other day, and when I was driving, if you look at the number of vehicles, is unbelievable, and dangerously driving, overtaking as well, even though there's only two lanes because there's roadworks and things of that nature. So I think particularly during festive seasons, with a long-term plan of rather using rail than road, I think there needs to be some restriction put in on heavy-duty vehicles. And also, I think their times of driving. I think that at the same vehicles, heavy-duty vehicles got to park off and rest and only take on the next morning again. Because I think fatigue certainly sets in. These people get paid on every load that they deliver. So they rush to their destination to drop off those goods, load again, rush back to Durban, to whichever province it is, and then do exactly the same it is. So it has quite an impact on these drivers. But unfortunately, they want to earn an income, and they don't get paid very well, I assume. That is why they want to do that. And the pressure that, of course, they are put on by employers. So I think we need to better manage the country in terms of supply and demand. During season, people need to order early and keep these heavy-duty vehicles off the road. But very importantly, I think, given the quality of the roads, I don't believe that even heavy-duty vehicles should be traveling at night. That is why I always say to our people, drive in the day, rest at night. When you are exhausted or tired, even if the slightest, indication that you might be exhausted, but stop every 200 kilometers at least. You should stop and have a 15-minute or 20-minute break, stretch your legs, relax a little bit, have some water, whatever it is, and then move on. It helps a lot. That little time that you're gonna, the extra time that you're gonna spend. And remember, a lot of these accidents are recklessness. It's negligence. It's alcohol. And then also remember, brothers, drivers are getting frustrated when they have to follow these heavy convoy, traveling 4, 5, 6 years, no way to overtake them. So people are starting to take risks and chances. And that's when you have these serious accidents. I mean, most of these serious accidents, you find heavy-duty vehicles are involved. But coming back to the issue of it, yes, we have UIP. All the owners of apartments and things on the beachfront pay towards UIP. It's working very well in North Beach, particularly with Boss Security working together with them there. You can see they have cleared up that area. You don't get much vagrants there. Previously, you just had to stop not even 15 seconds, somebody's at your window. That one goes, the next one is there. You don't find those things there. But the others, how many times, UIP, I repeatedly call them to tell them that, you know, you should just spread your people out. Let them stand in every corner. There's no need in six of them walking together when they walk from 1 kilometer. So what happens 1 kilometer behind you? But if you spread them out and visibility, when people can see, this is what, that you've got this security, then they would be afraid to even attack anybody. However, if you look at the quality of people that they are putting there, Brother Jeff, I can tell you don't need a Muhammad Ali for them. No, certainly you don't need that knockout punch from Muhammad Ali. They look so weak, and I'm told that they're getting peanuts, they're getting a stipend, and that's it. But let me tell you, the municipality takes 200 rand from every person that lives on the beachfront. 200 rand per person for each apartment. You understand? And they're taking this money, but look at what? Now you're paying it to the municipality who has some kind of, very kind of relationship, I'm understand, with the so-called UIP, which is a separate entity, but there's some collusion going on between them. So why not we have our own, all of us get together and have our own security to make sure that the beachfront is secure and take away these vagrants let me tell you, the number of people that are getting held up with their cell phones and things in handbags being snatched is unbelievably high. But where is this UIP security that is supposed to be provided by Itegwini? But not only that, Brother Shavin, you must just look at the state of the roads. I mean, you know, it's like, it's no longer pride to say you come from Durban. The streets are littered so badly, the stuff line. Where I am in my offices in Steel Road, in Windermere, you know, remember you had those heavy winds and things about month and a half, 2 months ago. Those things have been still lying on the street and nobody has done anything about it. Nobody. If you go to many streets, you hear they've been digging these things up because of water leaks and things. And that's it. They dig it, they fix it, and they leave it like that. They don't even cover it up again. Not even, you know, put some rubble to flatten it so vehicles can still pass easily. No. You know, if you look at the state of the city, the CBD, it's shocking. It is really shocking. Now, let me give you a good example. That if you go to some of the rural areas, you can feel the clean air. What can you feel in Durban in the state that it is? Durban CBD is rat infested. I promise you, rat infested. The drains are clogged. Also, you find the problem that all these homeless people on the streets, they are taking their stuff, putting it into those drains and covering it up at night. That is a storage facility for them. So your drainage system doesn't even work. They talk about the quality of water. 1 week, they will tell you it's perfect. It's been tested. 2 days later, you find that it is not good for drinking purposes. I was speaking yesterday, Brother Shafir, to somebody. Very knowledgeable, and they in business. And they also manufacture wet wipes and whatever it is. You're going to be shocked what this person told me about the water and quality in the city of Cape Town. It is 100 times worse than what it's supposed to have in terms of its content. He's going to send me the report. He says that it is shocking. That is the, and every time he goes to Cape Town and he drinks the water there, when he comes back, he's sick. He's got diarrhea. And people are, and yet the Western Cape will brag about having top quality water. I'm just waiting for that report to come from him. And he says they test all the time because of the products that they make, like wet wipes and things. So you can see to what extent the country has deteriorated. And we often think it is, you know, the collapse of the country or the poor delivery of services may only be in certain areas like the ANC here and things. No, every political party, wherever they govern. Perhaps, you know, I was thinking of something, Brother Shafir, that I need to ask Parliament, what about changing the system in Parliament? Let us get a question and answer session for opposition parties too. Let us to be able to take questions from the ruling party and from many others to be able to answer how we are delivering and what we are doing and what we are not doing and what we should be doing. Instead of all just attacking one, let us go and see. Let us reflect on ourselves and you'll be shocked what the outcome is going to be. the people are not performing, whoever they are, wherever they are. Corruption is rife wherever they are, whoever they are. So, I mean, it's not unusual in KwaZulu-Natal in the rural, go there. People are still walking 8 kilometers. You know, I'm so proud of my former leader, Brother Shepherd, Dalele Magwaza Msibi. She always said, I remember how she fought and said, no, I'm not going to build a single house where the toilet is going to be 50 meters away from the house. The toilets must be inside the house. I'm not going to get my gogo, 80-year-old gogo, at midnight wanting to use the toilet, and she must now become vulnerable, being attacked by people. She must go outside to the toilet. She said she will never allow that. And that is what she did. You know, she didn't believe in water tankers. She believed in providing proper water to the people through the system. You know, running those pipes. No, water through tankers today is a business, because that is where all the corruption and the money is being made. That is why you find municipalities are continuously delivering water with containers rather than doing something about having piped water to every home.
Gee, Ahmad, I'm looking at a message from Haji by Mullah. He says, Assalamu alaikum. As usual, Brother Shafar, so you have a way of improvising. But Jazakallah khairah for bringing on Ahmad Mandur Sheikh Imam. I want to congratulate him for being a parliamentarian that is recognized worldwide. And speaking truth, Allah will even get him to go higher. I want to know from Ahmad Mandur Sheikh Imam, how do we evaluate the different types of municipalities in the country? We know at one time they were all compromised. But I want to know how Itikweni, being such a powerful entity as a metro, but has nothing to show for it, how it has stood up this year. Please give us an evaluation. And also, I want to know about the Isipingo Beach river mouth. It has so much of E. coli. I believe the ammonia levels are so high that if I eat fish there every day for 30 days, I will die immediately. Please, Ahmad, give us your viewpoints. And once again, Jazakallah khairah for a lovely show on Markaz Sahaba, Consciously Connected. Haji Bhai Mullah, how do you respond to him, Ahmad?
Jazakallah, Haji Bhai. I really appreciate your kind words. But, you know, it's so difficult to even comment. I would love to say something good, but I don't have any evidence of satisfactory service or something that I can actually say that I can believe in that is going right in the city. You know, really, I mean, you know, even if I try, it's like a needle in the haystack, trying to find something that I can say and comment. Right. The street lights are still not working. The roads are in a shocking condition. You can see the quality of water, which you can talk about from North Beach to South Beach to the South Coast. You can see right up to Amkomaz, which falls under Itikweni, what the quality is. You can look at the high levels of crime that is taking place. You can see the free fall. I saw yesterday, I was just talking to somebody on the street corner. And I said, look at this lady. She's got chicken, okay, that she is carrying in a kind of a trolley, which she's prepared at home. No refrigeration. It's a very hot day. The entire day she's got it there, and she's selling it. And we are asking ourselves, is that not the reason why people are getting so sick with what you're eating, what the kind? I mean, you must just, it's a free for all on the streets. Taverns are open 24 hours. 24 hours, which is giving rise to so many accidents, so much of gender-based violence and things. But yet, nothing is being done. I say again and again, we know where the problems are. I got a reply yesterday, coincidentally, from the minister, because I wanted to know, Minister of Finance. I see it came in yesterday, on what is the total debt of all national and provincial government. It's now 6 trillion rand. You know, this is where he's come to. It's just over 6 million and something trillion rand. That is the national debt of this country. Okay? So where are we going? Itikweni alone, my brother, is over 8 billion rand in debt, Itikweni alone. Right? And the thing is this, you know, people are expected to pay for a service. But surely when you pay for a service, you must get that service. You are not getting it. They are given an ideal example. Each one here pays about 200 rand. Now, if you've got one block of 100 apartment, they are paying 100 times 200 rand a month. What service are they getting for it? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. You have Metro Police who have a responsibility, because they are basically an entity of the city, they don't fall under South African police services, even though that is what the intention is in the future to do. But where are they to be seen? Just drive around and see 4, 5, 6 of them standing in one street corner. Each one's got a cell phone reporting to their boyfriends or girlfriends or husbands or wives. That is all they're doing. Absolutely nothing at all. So the state, the city of Itegwini has deteriorated to such an extent that I think it's going to take a miracle to be able to get it right. The infighting between political parties continue. I mean, you must just go to so many different areas in the city of Durban and you look at the problems that the people are experiencing. Some of these roads, you can't go on drive on them anymore. They've been digging up all over, Brother Shepherd, all over. And this is one thing they specialize in. They'll dig it up, they'll probably go and find the leak and sort it out and then what? Leave it like that, standing for months on months on months. This is the state. You must look at the rat infestation in South Beach and other areas in the CBD. You'll be shocked at how bad the situation is. What are they actually doing about it? Nothing. So it's really a free fall. I can't say it's being governed because it's not. And everybody that's there must take responsibility, including the councillors. I want to tell you, when there's this incident, Brother Shepherd, and people call me and I have to call, let me tell you, it's almost a miracle if you ever get through to any of the councillors. I can tell you 9 out of 10 of them, the cell phones are off. You can't get hold of them. You just can't. So yeah, where do you actually go from here? Just where do you go from here?
No, absolutely, Ahmed. And looking at a message from Hassan Mia, he says, Assalamu alaikum, brother. I agree 100% with brother Ahmed. The electricity department is also in shambles. They have a limited knowledgeable people. We repeatedly have power failures and have to stay off the whole night to wait for the day shift. Ridiculous. As for the Metro Police, let not even go there. The Coke and the KFC Brigade. You know, Hassan makes a lot of sense there. You know, it's in shambles, Ahmed.
Well, certainly it is. And the question is, what do we do? You know, this is why I say repeatedly, Brother Hume, please, my brothers and sisters, elect credible leaders. Do you know there's another thing that's happening now? People are starting off being NGOs, NPOs, CPFs, this, that, and then that's a springboard for them to get into council and get these seats. But the thing is this, there is an expectation when you go there. Now, you'll hear many of them saying, we'll do this, we'll do that, we'll do that. But they've done absolutely nothing because it's the system that's the problem and that's what they fail to understand. It's the system. Perhaps if you do away with political party system, it might save the day because then each one will be accountable to their constituency. Right now, you account to your political parties and whether you perform or not, nobody is doing anything about it. This is the unfortunate thing about it. But I can tell you, Itegwini is deteriorating to such an extent. If you look at the number of abandoned buildings alone belonging to the state, which they're doing very little or nothing about. Now tell me, how do you take a chance? How? When you hear the Itegwini releasing a statement, the water has been tested good for drinking. And 2 days later, you find, no, there's so much of E. coli in this water. What a risk it is. People were getting sick, daddy all running to the pharmacies and clinics and things for system. How is it? And that is why I say to people, please, please boil your water. Don't ever take the word of Itegwini. They'll tell you what you want to hear. This is how bad the situation is. So they really don't have. Tell me, you're driving, you're walking. You are the Itegwini. You are responsible for governing the city. Do you need a rocket scientist to come and tell you the street light is not working or the cameras are not working? That this thing has been feared, this road has been dug and not fixed for months? Are these councillors and mayors and deputy mayors, Brother Shabbat, are they not using the same road? Are they flying from the office to their homes that they, even if you fly, you'll be able to see? So, but what is it? Why is it they don't see it or they don't care? Which is it? Now, my understanding is that when you go past there and you see that, you should stop, you should pick up the phone. That is why you are a representative of the people in the municipality. Stop, pick up the phone, to the relevant department, which you should have all the information, and say, hold on, this is what it is, this is when it doesn't, can you please come here and fill this up and tie it up? How difficult is it? There's rubbish lying in the street corner. Can you please get them to come here and remove it now? What is difficult about that? The cell phone is paid for by the municipality. You get your salary, you get everything paid by the municipality, which is the rate, by the way, not the municipality itself. Surely you should do that for them. How difficult is it? But I can tell you now, phone Itegwini and ask them to give you the number of all the councillors and try to call them and see what the response you're going to get.
Yes, Ahmad, looking at that message from Hafiz Tahir, he says, Assalamu alaikum. Great chat indeed. Really enjoying the program. Got a lot of vibe this morning. Jazakallah khair, brother Shafaz Ahmad Khan, Member of Parliament, Ahmad Manzoor Sheikh Imam. I'd like to bring in this issue. As in all democracies, Ahmad Manzoor Sheikh Imam, South Africa has both good and bad politicians. You fall under the former. For the past 20 years or so, the majority of our electorate have consistently chosen bad politicians to govern our nation. When will they ever learn? Because as long as they got a DOP, they will vote the same people because their copy is not right. How do you respond to Hafiz Tahir there, Ahmad?
Jazakallah, Hafiz, I appreciate it. Let me say this. Yes, I think what we should be doing is voting for statesmen and stateswomen, not for let's separate politicians from statesmen. And statesmen and stateswomen are those that are committed to serve the interest of the people. Politicians are there to serve their own interest. So I think that is where we must differentiate and separate the two. But you are absolutely correct. We put these people in there. And we come back and protest and complain about them. But we go back and put them in again. Because it's time to give grocery parcels. You'll get the food parcels. Either they're giving it to you from their pockets. No, they're not. They're giving it to you from your own money that they have stolen from wherever. When people go out and give you food parcels, you understand, to a very large extent, you know, they will be not taking it out of their own pockets. No. There are those that will do that because they believe in giving. Particularly if you're a member of the Ummah, you know it's your responsibility to give charity. So you're going to give it, you know. But these other people are expecting something in return. So now they know election time, you'll get a lot of food parcel. That I can tell you is going to come. And that is where the people fall into the trap. And I want to say again and again, we are to blame because we put these people in place. They promise, and when they let over, what happened? And you find them, you can't find them. So again, opportunity in 2024, let's identify the right kind of people and put them there so that you can hold them accountable, you know, so that they will do what you want them to do, don't do what they want to do. You know, I mean, you know, I'm observing what is going on. You know, Brother Shepherd, there's something else that's going on right now. Do you know the number of political parties, politicians, and organizations that are using what is happening in Palestine to score points for this election? This is what it is happening. They're not doing it because they love the Palestinian people and feel the pain and the hurt and the suffering of the Palestinian people. They're using the Palestinian issue for their own selfish desired reasons to want to get elected. This is what is happening right now.
Yeah, this is where we should be careful. And, you know, as Ahmad says, they are politicking and they're ticking with our brains and they're trying to tick-tock with us. Yes, Ahmad, I'm looking at this message from Dawood. He says, Assalamu alaikum. Ahmad Manzoor Sheikh Imam, you are one of those people that has been fortunate to be both in council and in parliament. What is the difference between a councillor and a member of parliament? Please, I'm an ordinary layman. Explain it, Ahmad, because you're a master when it comes to making things easy with your speech. May Allah give you a long life and carry on with the good work. I respond to Dawood there, Ahmad.
Well, Jazakallah, brother. Yes, first of all, local council is local government. You have to deal with the bread and butter issues in your area. You know, the delivery of normal services, water, electricity, making sure your street lights are working, your city is clean. You can also, you should be responsible to also create jobs and empower people in your areas. So you need to ensure that there's enough housing for your people, that you know you're living in a clean environment, a secure environment. So it's basically to do with all local issues in governing that. Everything to do with making your life more secure, safe, comfortable is the responsibility of local government. They even pass bylaws which they could put. And I'll give you a good example. When it comes to taverns and things, liquor boards are giving you a license till 2 o'clock in the morning. It is the municipalities, okay, that can ensure that these places close at 2 o'clock. But let me tell you what the local, like Itegwini, is doing. It's going and extending it to 6 o'clock and making it 24 hours. Instead of reducing it or complying with that, which, and that's what Metro Police and everybody doing at local government level, you are local legislation, bylaws are made by the city. The city should be passing bylaws that is going to work for its city. Look at the state of all these buildings that are standing there empty with drug dealers and it's a prostitution free for all. It's the responsibility of the city to deal with them. When it comes to health issues, you have a city health which does not fall under national health, which has the responsibility to go and apply the bylaws, make sure that people, I'll give you a good example. You go sometimes and you think you're going and buying samosas in a shop while you're enjoying it. And you come back and you find that you've got stomach cramps. It's because that oil there is supposed to be changed every single day. It's not being changed. Some of these shops are using the same oil for 2 days, 3 days, 4 days. And that is what's happening. Shop, the local health in from the local authority is supposed to go and deal with all those. So it's to do with everything to do with your local health. National, where we come from, we basically are legislators. We make the laws which, you know, amend and wherever we find weaknesses or there's new laws that need to be put in, that is basically. So we at a higher level are responsible for the country as a whole. Then you have the provincial government, of course, who's supposed to be responsible of ensuring that local government is delivering a thing. For it's a waste of taxpayers' money. You only need a two-tier government in South Africa and you'll be saving a lot of money. Okay? And that is you need a national government and a district level. Take away the local government and take away the provincial government. The district will have, like, Itegwini is a district on its own. So it will look after its own affairs and report to national government. Then you've got rural municipalities. You will find 4 or 5 municipalities which will fall under one district. The district will take care of all of them. But look at the amount of money you're spending on administration, on salaries and other administration. Okay, the bulk of almost 70% of our money in this country goes towards administration. So what really is left for you to spend? If you take 70% there, if you take the amount of money that is stolen, which is 40% on goods and services, I can tell you are lucky if there's 10% actually being spent on actually delivering the services. So national, we are passing laws, we make laws. So of course, we bring it to you for comments and whatever it is, but 9 out of 10, they don't care what you say. If they decided they want to pass it, they got a majority, they're going to pass it. Now, we, to some extent, in terms of the law, can't interfere in certain things when it comes to provincial governments and local government because they've got their own mandate, they've got their own legislation and things, even though it must still comply with national government, the laws of the country itself. And so they can pass certain bylaws, like what's happening in the Western Cape. While you have not dealt with the issue of restitution of land, Ikoyi and San, the first indigenous nation, have not been dealt with nothing, absolutely nothing they've received thus far. But the city of Cape Town, which also runs the province, Western Cape, which is Deiran, are selling large volumes of land to foreign nationals, which is pushing up the price beyond the means of the people of the Western Cape, okay, which will eventually, I can tell you, become like a Jewish state. So that mandate falls within them. That is why the Western Cape is now calling for, well, in some quarters, independence away from us. Alternatively, they want police to fall under them. Now, certain of these things are falling. You get provincial health is provincial, police is falls under national, okay, which they don't want. They want total control over that. And now we're running into trouble there because this is what the city of Cape Town or the Western Cape government is pushing for, to say, no, we don't want it to fall under national government. We want total control of the police and things. Perhaps sometimes it could be better run if it is under provincial, because at national there's too much to worry about and they don't have proper control. But what that is leading to, breaking the country eventually up into bits and pieces, and everybody starting to call for its independence, which is what, if you remember, Buthelezi was pushing for once upon a time, which is what the Western Cape is pushing for the other time. We need to understand we have a country that not every province is profitable. Not every province can stand on its own and sustain themselves. And that is why they get a lot of their revenue coming from national. Many of them depend on national revenue through our taxes and whatever it is for them to survive. But that doesn't mean, and I give you a good example, take Germany. I'm going to go back there. Germany, if you look at Bavaria, BMW. BMW has invested in the area called Bavaria. Yeah, I mean, the municipality has invested there into BMW. They get a returns, which they use to develop that area, and they get so much of returns that they don't only develop, they develop other areas as well. What stopped Itagwini from having invested in Toyota, Mondi, Sapref, Engine? What stops them from getting into these big, so you get a return which you take back and you spend into, you become self-sustainable, then handing, then receiving handouts. Durban has got great opportunities as far as I'm concerned. Great, great opportunities. But you need progressive thinking, people. You need that initiative. You need that drive. They're not interested in that. It's all about pocketing among themselves. Look at what the Zambian president said when he came in. He said before he was even sworn in, he had a document that he was all ready to sign. They sent to him on buying new vehicles for him and everybody else. And he asked them, what is wrong with my vehicle? Is it got tires? He says, yes. Is it running? Yes. Is it okay? Fine. So then why do I need a new car? I can use the same one. He canceled a whole lot of them. This is the kind of people you need.
Absolutely. I'm looking, you're just sticking my brains. They're talking about federation. I mean, if you look at KZN, if they, if it becomes a federation, they have everything, the infrastructure there. They have airports, they have harbors, they have coal mines, they have everything that you can think of, tourism. They will do very well. But as you can see, as a municipality, they have been run by the wrong people. And perhaps as a federation, they will be a flop. And then when you look at the Western Cape, okay, they are performing quite well. As a federation, as you know, they have an agenda, and you're making it quite clear, you know, selling land at exorbitant prices, but at a certain group, that agenda has been exposed, Ahmed. And if you look at these federation breaking away, but do we really have the manpower? Even if you look at KZN, it's known as the Kingdom of the isiZulu. I mean, the kingdom alone, they're having a problem. Who's the king and he's the king, or who's the, who put him there? And Ramaphosa, you know, backing this king and then suddenly going to court and saying, you know, I will back him. It seems as if there is a big problem in this country. And how do we get this problem right? Federation will be good if it's run by the right people. Ahmed, what's your thoughts?
Well, yes, KwaZulu-Natal has got great potential. But I can tell you it won't succeed. Because there's selfishness here, and people, people believe they're entitled to everything. They don't want to work for it. And also racism, tribalism is a major, major, major setback when it comes to KwaZulu-Natal. And that is why you can see KZN politics is different to other politics, Brother Shafiq. You can see why the number of political assassinations and things you have in KwaZulu-Natal. In KwaZulu-Natal, if they don't agree with you, if you don't step aside, you die. There's no other option. There's no place for negotiation or nothing at all. So KwaZulu-Natal, let us be honest, is deteriorating to the extent that, it again, even there, you need a complete change. And it's not necessarily a party that might be responsible. It's the policies and the system that we need to change, Brother Shanti. you know, this catered deployment where politics and administration is being mixed. It's a major problem. You should not get a politician, and I said this again and again, a politician should not be involved in the administration at all. His job or her job is to do political oversight and make sure projects and things are implemented and services are delivered. And in administration should be absolutely independent. In other words, even when you do employ, no politician should be sitting and approving the appointment or employment of anybody. Number two, no politician should have anything to do with the procurement or tenders or anything of that sort, should have nothing to do with supply chain other than oversight to make sure that we're getting value for money. Right now, it's the politicians that will only appoint their own people, municipal managers, CFOs, directors, HODs and things. They'll put their own people. Why? Because they get kicked back, then corruption comes in. Together with that, they give tenders to friends and people that they know. And when they do that, they're all getting kicked back. So that is basically the problem. That is why you're losing 40% on goods and services. Separate that too, nobody will even die. Nobody will get assassinated because there's no money to kill for it. That is why coalition governments are not even working. It's because of the access to money. So when they get them, and let me tell you, if any political party tells you that they're in coalition and they're not getting any kickbacks, brother, I'll laugh them off. I'll shave my head for them. They are all benefiting in one way or the other. And mark those that continuously talk about this is corrupt. They also, wherever they are in coalition government, they're doing exactly the same thing. So KZN, I want to tell you, is rotten to the core when it comes to corruption. I mean, go into the rural areas, Brother Shafu, and tell me what has changed in the land of the people there. What has changed in their land? Number one, they don't own any title deed, any rights to their homes because they live on Ingonyama Trust land, number one. Okay, that's a sensitive issue. It's sensitive because the apartheid government deliberately did that. So he knew people were going to, 50 years later, going to fight each other. He knows that. Right? So that's the first problem you got. Go and look at development in those areas. Very limited or nothing. Number three, the other problem you've got is just that if you look at the municipalities, now political parties are entering into coalitions with those that they can work with, and both of them must benefit. So you give one the mayor, you give one the deputy mayor, or you give one the speaker and one the mayor. You understand? Like Iteguini, all the same. But it is all about making sure that we can benefit from it. Not benefit the masses, but the parties can benefit from it. That is why South Africa created, perhaps maybe they need to do more studies to find where they came from, 17,500 black millionaires and or multi-millionaires in the last couple of years. Maybe that research needs to go a little further to tell us how many came from which province, might give us a better idea. But I can assure you a lot of them would have come from KwaZulu-Natal. So that is why I don't believe that KwaZulu-Natal will be able to go any further. If you look at the corruption and you look at who of the leaders come from in politics today that come from KwaZulu-Natal, and the state of the 18 out of 257 municipalities, I think it's one of the questions that one of our previous brothers also asked them. 18 out of 257 municipalities had clean audit. Now, what does that tell you?
Mother, you're making a lot of sense. Sad indeed that we have this type of scenario in this country. Another question here for you. It's from Brother Rasul. He says, Assalamu alaikum, Ahmad Mansoor Sheikh Imam. I'm glad you're there, man of honesty. I want to know all these court cases, different political parties taking each other to court. Who pays for these cases? Is it once again the tax man that pays for it, like how Zuma and the Zondos and all these people, they are, besides we paying their salaries, they have run amok with our money. They have run amok with our amana. Talk to me, Ahmad. Please talk to me. I'm enjoying every second of the show. Ahmad, how do you respond to Rasul?
Brother Rasul, Jazakallah, what a fantastic question you're asking. Coincidentally, I am asking the same question, and I'm asking the High Court in Pietermaritzburg. Leave everybody else. Charity begins. Let me talk about my own party. There are two factions that are fighting each other. And I can tell you, we've made lawyers into millionaires. We haven't paid the debts. We haven't done anything. But they are fighting each other. And who is paying? First of all, let me tell you, 100% the money is the taxpayers' money. There is no doubt about it. There's no question about it. Nothing to even think about. Now, political parties. The NFP has been infiltrated by its opposition who wants to see the NFP shut down. And monies, and that is why there is a process at the moment for the court to establish where and who is paying all these monies to attorneys, you know, to fight these cases in court. They are in court every other week. Every other week. They're there right now. There's about five matters in court. Who is paying all these monies? Where is it coming from? Why are you doing it? What do you want to achieve? All that, and I hope it will be one of them that will be able to give you the answer you're really looking for. I know where it is coming from. It's coming from political parties. These monies are in no doubt getting stolen from the taxpayers through these local government municipalities. That is where it is all coming from. But I want the court to pronounce on that. I want the court to tell us where all those monies have been coming, these unlawful processes you are putting in place, running to court. I got messages from, you know, person in my own party saying this lawyer needs 100,000, he needs 50,000 to defend that. Yet every other week, but it got no money from me. The question, and I'm the national treasurer of my organization. The question is, where is the money coming? Who is paying this money? Now, that is the question. All these court cases, you see, even the president of the country defending these matters and whoever it is, not a single cent comes from those people's pocket, unless, of course, the court says. And that, too, even when the court says it's punitive cost where you got to pay yourself, you will still go and get it from those corrupt people and that corrupt relationship you've got in government, in different spheres of government, and pay. So it still don't come back from your own pocket, even if it's punitive cost.
Yeah, Ahmed, a brilliant question there. And alhamdulillah, you know, a lot of this thing, I mean, this has to stop. Is this the only country in the world where, you know, the taxpayers pay for the politicians to have, you know, their own agendas paid for, you know, saving them or saving their skin, which is, you know, some of the things that they have done is unconstitutional. Something they have done, they have actually, you know, robbed the country of prosperity. And there they go in public and they say, our party will be taking so-and-so to the courts. And our party in the UAE say, they're paying from their own pockets. So we need to be careful, Ahmed.
Brother, the question I want to ask is, why do you need to take your person in your party or wherever it is to court for corruption when you have the opportunity to put in measures to prevent the corruption in the first place? Now, you're losing both ways. Number one, you lost through the corruption. Then you're going and spending taxpayers' money to deal with this person. So again, you're losing money because you could have rather diverted that money to deliver services. But you're not. You are spending it in court. Who are you enriching? All the lawyers are making big mega bucks out of it. I'm telling you, the NFP has made a lawyer in Maritzburg a multimillionaire. Just to the amount of money, which is going to be raised in papers. We want to know who is paying and why and where is it coming from. So the question is, why not prevent it? Now, I want to tell you, I am tired. Over 50 times or more, I have been raising this question to such an extent, Brother Shafat, my chairperson, Honorable Buthelezi, who is the chairperson on the Standing Committee on Appropriation in Parliament. He always raises what Sheikh Imam raises about value for money. Where an item that costs 10 rand, we are paying 100 rand. I've heard the other day of a mayor who's giving contracts to people. Every contract is only being given to the highest bidder. No consideration for anybody else but the highest bidder. To such an extent, Brother Shafat, his own councillors got no petrol and diesel money to go around and deliver services because he's involved in corrupt practices only to benefit himself.
So that indeed.
Where the problem is, you can stop it. I've begged government so many times. We know where the problem is. Let's close that gap. Like I gave a solution. Keep politicians out of supply chain and procurement. And don't let politicians appoint anybody. Do what they do in Ireland, because that's what I learned when I went there as well. And I'm glad I was on the same page when I went there. That you have an independent body of experts from outside of politics to appoint people based on merit. And procurement. I mean, let me tell you what we don't even do in this country, Brother Shepherd. We don't even see that there's some standardization when it comes to pricing. In other words, for an A4 examination pad, you might pay 10 rand in Durban and you'll pay 100 rand in Cape Town. Why should that be the case? Why should it be the case?
That's a good question. Why? A big why from Ahmad there. Ismail Umar says, Ahmad Manzoor Sheikh Imam and Brother Shafat, Jazakallah Khair for a very informative morning. There are a number of reasons for this ill-advised choices, which possibly include traditionalism, racism, African nationalism, personal incentives, or just the plain naivety of believing false electoral promises. Whatever the reasons, it has a devastating impact on the socio-economic circumstances of our country, Ahmad Manzoor Sheikh Imam and Brother Shafat, and has led to the near destruction of the country's once valuable infrastructure, albeit built by the apartheid regime that was designed to serve the basic needs of our people. There were powerful institutes working to the T, but subsequently everything went pear-shaped. I also want to add, Ahmad Manzoor Sheikh Imam, how do you survive as an Indian in this country divided by African nationalism? It's a miracle that you are still relevant. Ahmad, Ismail Umar calling a spade there. How do you respond, Ahmad?
Brother Ismail Umar, Jazakallah for that. You're correct. How did I survive and how do I survive? Maybe I must show you the post where one of my very own colleagues from my own organization, who was not there when I started this party with my leader, and he says, and I quote, the ANC has Praveen Godan, the IFP has Naren Singh, and we have our own Sheikh Imam. How long are we going to allow the minority Indians to come and run our black parties? Here's the answer. That is what you go through. The color of your skin, and particularly, Brother Ismail Umar, is KwaZulu-Natal politics the most racist province in the entire length and breadth of South Africa? You don't get this in other provinces. No, you did. And let me also tell you, whether you write or not, you can stand on the top of the building and scream that you jump out there but you'll stand by your principle that you are right. It does not matter. If you're not that color in KwaZulu-Natal, you're not going to get that support. I'm telling you now, you can't get it. Now, let me tell you, when we were doing the list in 2014, I think it was, I booked the hotel rooms for all my colleagues where we were doing it in Johannesburg, near the IEC. And there was not enough rooms on the other wing, so I booked the site. So one of my colleagues, she's from the Eastern Cape, and she was sleeping. And that was next to the committee room that we were discussing the list of it. What do you think my guys were doing outside, not realizing that she's sleeping in that room? They clearly said, we cannot put Magabi on this list on the top. She's Khoza. She's not Zulu. We can't. And she heard everything. How do you like that one? So that's how bad the situation is. And that is why South Africa is, there's no such a thing as a rainbow nation. We are far from rainbow. Let me tell you, the colonialists did a good job in dividing us and causing hatred and things. Who hates the Indian community the most in South Africa? It's not the white man. It's not anybody. It's not the Khoza, Sotho, Venda. Nobody is the Zulus. But nobody is remembering the sacrifices that the Indian 1860 indentured laborers made, the conditions that they lived under. Today, farming, even though it's bad, it's a paradise. How our fathers and forefathers worked there, no toilets, no proper housing, nothing. but they made sacrifices and contributed to the economic growth of this beautiful country. Let me tell you. So they don't realize that. How many of the farms that we have given today is a real success? But our forefathers who worked on those sugarcane plantations, who started the struggle? It's not the ANC, let me repeat. It's not the ANC that started the struggle for freedom in South Africa. It is the Indian Congress and the Colored Congress and others, and then created the NIC and the Transvaal Indian Congress and others. In fact, Mandla Mandela, in a discussion the other day in Johannesburg, also raised that before the birth of the ANC, Congresses were already in existence. He admitted that. So people forget this role that we played in making it. But let me reiterate, people believe this country belongs to them because you might be a majority. Well, if you want to talk about ownership, can we go back to the Khoi and San, the first indigenous? Because everybody came here and found them here. So if the country rightfully belongs to anybody, it belongs to the Khoi and San. But nobody talks about the Khoi and San. Everybody else said it belongs to them. But fails, neglects, or refuses to accept that it's the Khoi and San that were here when they came. It's the Khoi and San that defeated the Portuguese. Today you would have been under Portuguese rule. It's the Khoi and San that defeated them.
Yeah, Ahmed, looking at the message from Shafiq, he says, Ahmed Manzoor Sheikh Imam, Allah bless you as usual, and also Brother Shafar for bringing in that relevant guest and asking the relevant question. My contribution is, if you look at a political career, generally it should be seen as a vocation, a calling to public service inspired by a personal desire to project and apply ideologies, values, principles and policies that optimally benefits the nation's socio-economic well-being. But in our case, a political career is to make ensure that you got a big fat paycheck, and then with your corruption chummies, you also got more money, and then you end up being these heavyweight, oversized politicians that can't even fit into their cars. Please, Ahmed, when will this ever stop? Hey, Shafiq is killing us, Ahmed.
Well, you know, let me say this, my brother, Jazakallah for your comments, and I understand the way you feel. Many people are disgruntled, unhappy with what is going on, and rightfully so, and that's why so many people are leaving the country, which is also causing dysfunctional families now when you have to leave. But let me say this. Even though we may be individual as, you know, well, they call them politicians or statesmen, stateswomen, you can contribute if you want. Now, I'll give you a good example. I said to the president, I've said to the Minister of Human Settlement, I've said to the entire House and the nation, Mr. President, what stops you right now? We always talk about apartheid. We remain one of the most unequal societies in the world. Okay. Now, the number of homeless people is rising. Your dignity lies in where you come from, where you live. People don't even ask you today, what's your name? The first question, where are you from? So I said, what stops us right now, since you governing this entire country and most of the local authorities in the country and provinces, to give every South African, in order to address the inequalities of the past, every South African family, including a single parent family who has no home, give them just a piece of land. You are giving them their identity and their dignity back. Don't worry about the water, electricity, and sanitation. You can tell them through your municipality, in 2024, I'm giving 2,000 houses water and sanitation. In 2025, I'm giving another 1,000. People will be satisfied. But what did you do in order to address the inequality? You have given them a peace. You've given them their dignity back. And I can tell you just that alone. And you don't need nothing. You just need to subdivide the land, give it through to them, and then work through your... Stop building houses through your municipalities. You could even go and give the people, create a state bank, which they said they're going to create the Human Settlement Development Bank. They did and did nothing with it. You are lending money to the Reserve Bank. Taking the taxpayers' money, lending it to the Reserve Bank, from the Reserve Bank, and the Reserve Bank is lending it to the banks, and the banks is lending it back to the people, making money and paying back the money. That is what is also happening. So why don't you create a kind of a bank, a human settlement bank or state bank, and give it to the people at a very, very low interest rate? You understand? So you don't have the responsibility of building, or they do it. Can you imagine how much of economic growth? But what would you have done? You have addressed the inequalities of the days of apartheid, and you gave everybody. You say the land belongs to all who live in it. So let's give it to them. You don't need nothing. In fact, you don't even need no legislation. Each municipality you govern can do it now, today. They can start if they want to. What stops them? Nothing.
Yeah.
So there are things that we can do if we want to do right now to be able to provide, you know, to give our people a more dignified life. You are wasting your time going and taking 10,000 police officers, recruits. Half of them will leave. Some of them are going to die. But you're not addressing what is causing the high levels of crime, the high levels of unemployment in the country. You know, children giving birth to children, 91,000 children last year, 10-year-old and 12-year-old. The taverns are open 24 hours. People are partying. They're not going to. 60% of that 18 billion or 12 billion that you give for NSFAS funding is thrown in the bin because they drop out in the first year. Get the drugs, availability of drugs in those areas. Get to the root causes of the socioeconomic conditions and you reduce the crime. No, you want to pump. Just now, I told them last week, Brother Shepherd, you got CPFs, you got everything else, neighborhood watches, everything. Now you're going to have street committees, and then eventually you'll need a police officer outside every house. That is the direction you're moving to. Is that the solution? It's not. So there are things that we can do, you understand, to create a better quality of life that is not even going to need much, to be honest with you. But what you need is unity. But let me tell you the problem with politics. If you give the people everything they want, they don't need you. They won't even come and vote anymore. That is how politicians think. But a statesman would say, no, I'm here to serve my people. That is why I became a politician and decided to take on this public representative job. I must eat, sleep, walk, talk the quality of life of my people. When my people are happy, I am happy. That is how it's supposed to be.
No, absolutely, Ahmed. It seems like your fan club is following you, you know, from where? Yeah, all the, I see regular names are coming up here. Asif says, Assalamu alaikum. Great chat indeed, Ahmed Manzoor Sheikh Imam. My opinion is a political career should be practiced with decorum, transparency, prudence, propriety, and an adequate degree of humility and compassion. It can be practiced independently or within an established political party. The above describes the nature of a good politician. Unfortunately, not only South Africa, but the whole world. Look at the UK, look at the US, look at Pakistan, look at whatever country you want to look at. They are in shambles. It is as if the shaitan has come to the fore. Please, Ahmed Manzoor Sheikh Imam, this South African government too is all about drinking and partying and merrymaking and stealing and mafia states here, there and everywhere. Not forgetting the foreigners who add to the mayhem and the looting and the stealing and the corruption in this country. Please, Ahmed, address. Ahmed, how you address that issue?
Well, I can understand the sentiments of the brother. That, like we've discussed, there is a purpose for a politician. Are they fulfilling that? No. So the question is, what do we do? We need to correct that. How do we correct that? We go out and identify the right kind of people. You've tried the rest and you failed. Now start identifying other leaders that will go there and eat, sleep, walk, and talk the interest of the people on the ground. It's the only thing we can do, because we can go out there and complain and say this is not done, that is not done, but come back in the election and vote the same people in. That is why I say maybe we need to change and move away from a party system where people can elect their leaders, individual leaders. Let the people elect the presidents of the country. If we can do that, there's nobody fighting for each party and power and control, because we all are equal there. That is what I think we need. You know, I'll give you a good example, you know. It's not everybody that's not working. A few days ago, last week, I got a call from a guy to say that he went to the garage, Brother Shepherd, and he found this baby abandoned in a pram full of cockroaches, beautiful baby, about a year old. And where was the mother? The mother was prostituting. He took the child and he went home. But he left a note where the child is going to. And they got in 3 days. You don't know how much of love this man, his wife and two daughters, is it, gave to this child. Eventually, the mother came, the father. Man, we didn't. I phoned the minister. And I told the minister, please advise me, what do we do? The child is here. She shouldn't be here legally. But how can, the mother is here. They're harassing. They want to take the child. Minister said, Sheikh Imam, I'll sort it out for you now. Within 5 or 10 minutes, I got a call from the provincial manager. Soon as the provincial manager called me, she said, within 10 minutes, somebody will call you. The manager for Durban called me. Within another 5 or 10 minutes, she was outside my premises in my offices. We went there and got her to sort the problem and take the child away. Now, there are people that are working. This all happened in under an hour, I promise you. 45 minutes tops, all this effort. So there are those that are working, that are committed, that you can pick up the phone. That's why I say that a counselor in a Tegwini who went past and found this road is dug up and nothing has been done is not supposed to drive past without stopping there, picking up that phone and calling his colleagues in Tegwini and saying, can we have a vehicle here now to come and sort this problem out? That is what politics is supposed to be about. You can't hear about something and do nothing about it. You can't, when your neighbor is hungry and got no food to eat and you are a politician and a public representative, you can't be having a 5-course meal in your home. And that comes from Sharia as well, Brother Shepherd. You know that. You understand. You can't be having a 5-course meal and your neighbor's got no food. You can't. So let me tell you, you need to instill in politicians. Of course, yes, I know my brothers are going to raise concern about the conduct of Muslim politicians all over the world and Muslim countries that are Muslim governments. Yes, you're correct. Yes, the question you got to ask, are they complying in terms of here to do the right thing, which is prescribed upon each and where every one of us in terms of our responsibility to others? That's why, again, I come, you need to identify the right kind of people. You really need to do that. If we want to tell, how many people, Brother Shafat, are going to leave the country and go abroad? How many? How many can afford to do that? How many of us will be happy that our children, even though you know they'll be safe and secure, how many of us can take the fact that our children are leaving and going? When do you see them? Even when you die, they won't even be able to come and visit your grave, to make it to the funeral. So, we must consider that this country is a beautiful, one of the most beautiful countries in the world, I promise you. I've traveled extensively, but we need direction, which is what we don't have. And maybe you need to bring in, you know, Islamic principles, ethos and morals and values. You don't need a Muslim party. You need a party with Islamic ethos, principles, morals and values. Strange enough, you know, Brother Shafat, a brother, a Gujarati or Hindu brother who has a political party. Do you know what he said to me a week ago? He said to me, Sheikh Imam, one thing you must never do is deviate from your Islamic ethos and principles and values. Can you imagine it came from him? That's what he said.
Ahmad, you want to know what's happening this morning? There's lots of messages coming through, and one of the messages says, Ahmad Manzoor Sheikh Imam, will he be standing for elections again? He belongs to bigger parties, not the NFP. It is like a tadpole for him. Come on, Ahmad. Where's the big party you're going to dive into? You can make a difference for that. Ahmad, what's your future like? I mean, do you want to divulge it this morning, Ahmad?
Well, yes and no. Also remember, my brother, Jazakallah for that, and I appreciate your comments. And my problem is, remember, you go into some of these big parties and you get drowned. You will have to sing their praises and do what they want you to do. You lose your independence, your objectivity for what you want to achieve for your people. But on the other hand, I want to tell you, my brother, yes, indeed, you are the NFP has been very problematic, even though I started it from the ground and my leader, unfortunately, you know, she has died. And yes, there is a plan. Inshallah, the plan will be unveiled very shortly. I ask all my brothers and sisters to make dua, inshallah, that the plan works. Allah is the greatest of planning. And if, you know, and so that I can continue playing a role in the lives of our people and also, you know, hold others in the country, parties accountable. And perhaps if we can work together and identify the right kind of leaders and be part of this organization, we'd be able to give direction to others so that we can take this country forward. That is will be my plea to them. But I can assure you, I've had calls from many, many quarters. Many, many people are meeting me. There's somebody meeting me this morning at 10 o'clock that has flown down from Johannesburg. And there is, inshallah, a plan, you know. But like I said, Allah is the planner of all plans. And only Allah can make this successful. And Allah knows what's best for us all. And but yes, indeed, an announcement will be made in due course, inshallah.
Shalom. Then also, let's make this the last question as we are nearing Quran time. And this message says, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. We wish you all the best, Ahmed Manzoor Sheikh Imam, and a great chat as usual with your right-hand man, Brother Shafaat. Hey, is that my, I mean, not his right-hand man, I'm his brother in broadcasting. What do you say, Ahmed? This time they'll say, hey, right-hand man, you know, this way. No. It's just be in the media together. So he's my media man, brothers in broadcasting. He says, may I remind you, Ahmed Manzoor Sheikh Imam, there are very few politicians in this world that stand up and are recognized worldwide for the truthfulness. You are one of them. And alhamdulillah, I hope and pray those Muslim members that are part of parties that are anti-Palestine and that are pro-Zionist will learn a lesson from you. You have never compromised. You have spoken out in parliament. How do these brothers who shamelessly are in the banner of these pro-Zionist parties, how do they face you? But that's a powerful question, perhaps in a powerful way to end the program this morning.
Jazakallah, and I appreciate your confidence in me, my brother. Well, first of all, let me tell you, I have been offered positions by some of those that are pro-Zionist in any event. But of course, I am a Muslim. I may not be a perfect Muslim, but I'm a Muslim before I'm anything else. I will not, no matter what, no matter how much, compromise my ethics and my principles and my values. You know, even in my own party, my brother, I have great difficulty because I'm not willing to compromise my principles. And I'm glad that to some extent, some of my people, like I was in escort to a full house, a full hall the other day on Thursday, was it? Friday. And they appreciate that. That, you know, because when you compromise your principles, your ethics, then you might as well just give it. You know, so I can assure you that that as far as politicians are concerned, particularly those that organizations that are support the Zionists, get funding from the, remember, it's all about funding. These people are getting monies and things. That is why I threw that 30 silver coins at them, because it's all about money. But we got to ask ourselves, if you are a Muslim, where does the issue of money come when you believe that you're all, everything that comes from Allah? And you only have it temporary. I keep saying to people, how much do you want to have? How much? Because how long can you control it? Because when you're going to die, you're taking nothing with you. You will leave it to the next generation. Do you know what the next generation is going to do with it? Whether they'll spend it in 1 month, 1 year, or how they're going to go, they're going to try and hoard it or save it? You can't. But Allah has created an environment for you, even if you create a generation of nothing, Allah will turn that generation into something and give them all the wealth. So you don't need to run after that wealth. On the one hand, you say that, you know, your risk comes from Allah. But on the other hand, you want to run after that money to such an extent you want to sell your ethics and your principles, your morals and your values. Look at the Palestinian people right now, what they're going through. There it is in the last 24 hours. 1,200 of them have been killed, Brother Chakra. 200. They are in a helpless situation. We are eating, drinking, talking, walking, driving, going to the beach, doing everything. those people are just only in fear and dying mercilessly. So can I now go for a few rands, which will come today and can be finished tomorrow? I must consult my ethics and my principles. No, my brother. It can't be done. So to those brothers and sisters that belong to these organizations, I don't want to say anything insulting to you, but surely you should realize by now you're in the wrong place at the wrong time. Come back home. If you are a Muslim, if you are one of those Muslim brothers and sisters, come back to your rightful senses and come back to your rightful place. Don't try to justify, because some of you tried to justify with me many years ago by telling me it's not your policy. And I turned around, if you know who you are, if you are listening, I said to you, don't come to me with that rubbish. Sorry, I have to use those terms, my brothers and sisters. Surely no party is going to go put it in your policy. So I want to say to you, you need to really have reevaluate yourself. And I want to say to their families, you too have an individual responsibility to re-look at those people that your life is part of, whether they are doing the right thing. Because you also have a responsibility to tell them what they're doing is right or wrong. You have that responsibility. That money that you're earning is haram. The money that you're earning is haram if that person is earning money at the same time promoting Zionism and promoting the atrocities and human rights violation of your own people, of the Ummah. And whether it is anybody, even if they're not part of the Ummah, if their rights are being violated, and you are part and parcel of that process directly or indirectly, then that food, that money, that everything that they bring home is haram, as far as I'm concerned. And so I will urge you to do the right thing. It's never...
Jazakallah khair, brilliant indeed, the engineer saying. Don't forget Jews, yes, we know it's going to be 52 minutes long. Ahmed, you have a mashallah, beautiful, lovely day ahead. Inshallah, we'll talk to you soon. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.